This is the DRF Players Podcast.
We ended up going on so long in our Derby Pod discussion that we've decided to cut the episode into two parts. This is the start of part two.
The 10 far right goes up for Ron Mouquette. Second start off of the bench right now, coming up in Louisville. He got a 92 last out. That was his career best buyer, closing from out of the clouds. He just got up to nip Mr. Z. He has the running style. He doesn't have the figs right now, though.
He sure doesn't. He does not look fast enough to tangle with the best of these. But he's probably more than Keen Ice for me, the one I could see at least putting a bet in there with just him in fourth and everybody I like on top.
And you'll get a number. You get a number, I'd imagine you're going to get 30, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, maybe these 90s figures are enough for fourth, right? I mean, even though seven of these horses
Boy,
have
I
run.
I don't know, man.
Maybe not.
You know what, though? And I have no idea what we're really even looking at for it.
Hard to guess.
Yeah, no, I don't know how much you know about certain other things. Some people were talking about, you know, earlier this week on Twitter. Earlier this week, it's Tuesday. You know, it might take a 110 to win the Derby. I'd be shocked if a 110 won the Derby.
You think it's going to be higher?
No. I think it'd be going to be lower than that.
See, I feel like there's enough horses sitting who've run big figures that a 110, I mean, like two horses have run more or less of a 110 in Materiality and Upstart. So I feel, and they're not even really the ones that I like. It doesn't sound crazy to me. That's probably what, if you'd asked me, Pete, what's it going to take? I probably would have said either 108 or 110.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I could see that, you know, I mean, because it's true, and we've talked about it a little bit, not necessarily on the podcast, but this is a year where you've got, what, six or seven horses that have run a triple-digit buyer, and there were some years where you had one, maybe two, and those one or two were 101, 100. So their horses, if you believe the figures coming in, they're horses that have won or run races that are fast enough.
It's usually a peak, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
with any step forward.
The Derby, I think, we could check this, but I believe, typically speaking, whatever the winning Derby figure is going to be a number faster than what the horses have run before, because obviously you're dealing with developing three-year-olds. Man, so based on that, that's where I get that idea from.
It would still just be, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, this would be an historic group then. I mean, are we on the precipice of that, something like that?
I mean, I'd have to go back and look. When you were doing your research, Mike, how uncommon is a 110?
I wasn't looking at it
recently, and I can only speak for what I've seen. Recently, we're looking like 102, 103, at most.
Ones that come to mind, and I don't think they were exactly 110, but in the 109, 108, 109 range are ones like Street Sense and Big Brown, and they're horses that had run, I think Street Sense had run a 108. It wasn't in his prior start. It might have been in winning
the
juvenile.
Yeah.
That year, the highest last out buyer was actually Curlin at a 105. But, you know, Big Brown, I think, had run a 108 or 109, and I think he maybe paired up that 109 in the Derby. So those are the
I'm
ones
feeling better
that
now
I,
to say 108. I'm liking 108 rather than 110.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. I think it's going to be high 107.
You talk about history, though, Matt. I mean, how often do you have seven horses who've run 100 coming into the race?
No,
that's got to be pretty
point.
Rare.
No, it is. That's a very good point.
And also, every year, I feel like, for the last 10 years until this year, you hear a lot of negativity. Oh, this crop, it's not good. You don't hear that about this crop.
No.
That's one of the things you haven't heard.
But that's part of the reason that I'm and do we actually know how good they are?
No. Time will
tell.
Well,
I think part of the reason why we haven't heard, oh, this crop isn't that good, is because a couple of them aside, you know, your Texas Reds and Cozons and Calculator are maybe Far From Over. But aside from that, you've got most of the big players that we were excited about 3 or 4 months ago.
Could you imagine if Texas Red was in this race?
Yeah.
I'd be excited.
Man.
Right?
You know?
Right? Yeah.
It's fascinating to see. I can't wait to see how the race actually is run on Saturday. And the fact that it's right around the corner, this is good. Far right, we'll move on from him. We think he's a late closer.
Yeah,
maybe get a
fourth,
piece.
You know, fourth, third. But I might even key him in third or fourth just because I like him, and we just know that's exactly what
he's
going to
be
do.
Doing it. Right.
Yeah.
He also has Mike Smith in his corner, which
yes.
is always a positive. Number nine is Upstart. Now, I think Upstart is a very I don't want to say polarizing because he's not to that level. I think Upstart is a very, very much a horse that you either are all, not all in, but you love him or you hate him. I don't know how many people are in between.
Yeah, you might be talking to one.
I may be one of the in-betweens, too. So.
How about you, Mike? Do you have a strong opinion on this horse?
Pretty much. You know, I mean, he's not one I love, but I don't really want him to beat me.
But I hear what you're saying from other chatter I've seen. Some people are, it seems, very proud. Upstart is my horse. Or, Upstart can't do it. And I just, you know, you look at the speed figures he's running, I don't see how you can say he can't do it. The breeding... It's not so much the breeding, it's just so much the impression that this horse has given me from day one. I'm just not fully convinced about his ability to get the mile and a quarter. I'm not fully convinced about his ability to run really big races back-to-back, which is never easy. I feel like he's a regression candidate, but at the right price, I'm happy to include possibly at the B level in my multis.
Here's how I'm thinking. I'm hoping... He draws the one post, so I could happily, happily.
Then you don't have to worry about it.
You know what? That's not a bad thought, though. Yeah. I mean, if you know, we talk about the one hole so much, so often.
Yeah.
If there's a horse that you're like in between on,
yeah.
And you want a surefire way for you to just say you're out.
Yep.
One.
He's the kind of horse that if I would probably defensively use if he draws any other post, but if he draws the one post, it's like, oh, thank God.
Now, what are the real... Let's talk about the real... I agree completely. Anecdotally, I just feel like every year that horse gets a bad trip who's in the one post. But when we look at the raw stats, the one post has done well. Is that from older data with shorter fields? What's your impression, Mike? And have you looked at that as to what the real... Let's talk about the reality and the myth of the one post for the Kentucky Derby.
Well, so what I did...
Unscheduled sidebar here.
It's funny you ask, Pete, and maybe you knew... Maybe you were playing lawyer here and you asked a question you knew the answer to, but I've actually looked at the last 50 derbies. And in the last 50 derbies...
You don't get research like this just anywhere.
38 of the derbies. So 12 of the derbies had fields of 14 or smaller, which means they did not use the auxiliary gate. So 38 of the last 50 derbies have used the auxiliary gate, so they had fields of 15 or higher.
Or 15.
And I for I'm kind of with you, you know. I mean, within that 50 races, you've got sample sizes of 8 horse fields, and you know, even Secretariat was Secretariat, but he was in a 13 horse field. So a lot of those, for comparison sake, I felt like the one hole was less of a disadvantage when you're just facing fewer horses.
For sure,
yeah, partly because when you've got 8 horses, you've got mathematically a 12.5% chance for any post.
Absolutely.
But also
the cavalry charge effect. It's more like a normal race and less like the insanity rodeo riding you see going into the first turn of the Kentucky Derby, where it seems like that one horse has to check every time.
And especially since when you've got 15, 16, 20 horses, they are all breaking generally diagonally to the left, which means they're all essentially coming for you. Because they've got to get position through the first time in the stretch and then before the turn.
Avoid going wide. Yes.
Yeah, so I looked at those 38 races. The last 38 races that use the auxiliary gate, there have been a total, they average about 18.1 starters per race. So big fields.
It's amazing.
You know, this is back when, in some cases, you had 23 horse fields or even 21 horse fields, which is now limited to 20. So that's why it's that high. But still, in that time, 38 runnings, the only winner is Ferdinand. No other horses even hit the exacta. So the one post in those races are 1 for 38 with no seconds and 3/3. And that's it.
Do you remember, does anybody watch the tape on Ferdinand's Derby lately? How did
he
do it?
How
do you do it?
So he broke well. You know,
probably critical, right?
3 or 4 steps out of the gate, he broke well.
Matt's shaking his head.
We talked about it. Let him go.
Yeah. Okay. He broke well. 3 or 4 steps out of the gate. You know, Shoemaker just kind of sat chilly on him and let the rest of the field kind of overtake him. And around the turn, I think he probably was towards the back of the field, if not actually last. And, you know, it's tough. Those old footage ones, they're not like today where you can't see the full field the whole time. They'll do close up to the top three horses on the back stretch, and so you don't know who's moving late. But then, you know, in the top of the stretch, Shoemaker found room, rallied along the rail, and, you know, pulled away and won easily. So it's hard to tell exactly what was happening when the camera wasn't on him, but I think that was, partly he got lucky because he didn't get pinched over by the other horses that were.
Well, and that clean break, even though he didn't use speed the whole way, that clean break is so important because at least it gives you a chance to establish position. Yeah. But, I mean, Ferdinand was a really good horse and was able to – that takes energy. So essentially, the trip you just described, I would describe as a double move just based on the early energy to get position and then having the run late. Takes a really good horse to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You gotta go back and watch him, though, because that was a different story where the horses are not breaking from so far to the left down to the rail. Now the That's one true. Horse breaks directly in line with the rail.
That's true.
And how was it then? How was it different than now?
There weren't as many horses, so you didn't need to take... There were, what, 16?
There were 16 in that race, but they had to use the auxiliary gate. The difference is, and it's really interesting. We were looking at it. Matt and I were actually doing this before the podcast. In 86, the space between the two gates was a lot smaller. It was basically like one horse post.
Pretty much,
between the 14 post and the 15 post. It was like one. Now, if you look at it, it's like 2.5 or maybe even 3 spaces between those. You got a big gap between the main gate and the auxiliary gate,
which is why so many connections either want 14 or 15.
Yeah
because that's logical.
You have room to your less chance to your outside or to your inside, right?
Yeah,
right. And so because of that, I think that's Matt's point, is now what it's meant is they can't go further out towards the grandstand.
They gotta,
but because there's more space between the two gates, they push the one post in essentially into the turn.
If you need the all time, and he had all sorts of problems, but the race replay that demonstrates it the most, and you watch Garrett Gomez on Looking at Lucky, he tries to hustle him and get him out to the right before everyone does what Mike was the pinball where everyone's coming over.
Yeah.
Then finally he got pinched a little bit there, but then everyone else is still coming over on him. The one is the only post. And you know what the only thing I'll say is? Unless you are an absolute come-from-out-of-the-clouds horse, I don't think it's that big a deal.
Right.
Because if you're
just
far right...
Just let everybody go.
If you're far right, I don't think the one means you're done. If you're American Pharoah, Carpe Diem...
It'd be tough because they're going to have to get lit up. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to get lit up early and then still prove they can stay late.
So
it's going to be hard.
I think you either look at it and you get quarter-horsed out of the gate to try to clear, or you have to sit.
Oh, imagine Dortmund down there, that beast.
No.
How big he is.
No, and I hate to say it, but it would be very difficult for me to use him on top or even in second with any... I think it's a huge deal.
You got to be a super horse.
And I'm glad the numbers back it up. That's awesome that you did all that work.
I think it's
that's
huge, really cool. Huge deal.
And great job by both of you guys watching that tape. That's awesome.
The 8 El Kabir goes out for John Terranova. Zayat Stables, one of their triumvirate. We already talked about Mr. Z. El Kabir has now what it looks like the correct running style based on his last couple efforts where he's coming from much farther out of it. The problem is he's not fast enough.
I don't think he's fast enough, and I've just never been a huge fan, and, you know, bad karma here. No CCL. Offense. Yeah, no offense to, obviously, Calvin Burrell. I mean, you can't do better than him riding Churchill, but I didn't love how that all went down, and I don't know. I'm not thrilled with El Kabir for a variety of reasons. I'm going to try to beat him.
Mike?
You know, I'm generally with you. I don't think he's fast enough. I don't think he's good enough, and... throughout the whole winter, I've kind of been tossing a lot of the horses that were running up at Aqueduct. I mean, I think this day and age, if you've got a really good one, why are you keeping them in the freezing frozen tundra of Aqueduct where they're running with snow on the ground next to, you know, there are other places. I just don't think he was beating much, and he's going to have to step forward in a big way to win here.
I don't love the pedigree. I see Scat Daddy. I go, you got no shot. But then again, he got his final eighth in the wood in about 12-4. So he was actually moving at the end, and his gallop out was really, really good.
Actually visually looked. One of the reasons I'm unhappy about the Lopez thing is I don't know what the instructions were or whatever, but it just seemed to me like that was the kind of run that would set you up well for a race like the Kentucky Derby.
But I still think it's a matter of if you can get Calvin Burrell, you're going to probably take him, no?
I guess. You know, you write some guy.
What do you think of Florent Giroux? I mean, right, they're still wavering about him riding Stanford. What did he do wrong?
Yeah, well, that's a fair point.
You know, I mean, that's.
But it's more. I'm less complaining about the ejection than the Twitter bit.
Well, that's a personal thing.
Yeah.
And you can't let the personal get in the way of your wager.
No, you're right. You're right. But I don't like the horse anyway, so it was just something that's to right. say rather than, oh, he's too slow, which would have been my other comment.
Here's my other stat.
Go ahead.
It applies to a few runners in this race, including one we haven't talked about yet.
Do we want to save it then? Because we still have seven to go.
We could. Let's do it.
Let's save it. Okay. Now we're getting to the, I feel like we're at the cream of the whole deal now. The seven is materiality. He's undefeated for Pletcher. 3-for-3 coming out of a win in the Florida Derby with a 110 buyer. He hasn't done anything wrong in the track. Do you like him? Do you not like him, Pete?
I think he has to be considered a contender. That said, as good as those races have been, I still believe, all in all, even though maybe the figure can stay the same or regress and he wins, I still feel like overall, as a horse, he has to improve, which is a hard thing to do. And what I mean by improve is, you know, going from racing against the longest field is 9 to this field of 20 has to show that he can take his racetrack with him, something that doesn't always work out so great for these Todd Pletcher trainees. I'm definitely going to have him on my odds line as a single digit contender, but he's not an A for me.
He's a single digit contender, but he's not an A?
You're like a 9 or 10 to 1. Okay. You know?
In a 24 sealed, that's pretty good.
I was going to say, that's probably third choice.
It's a contender. It's a contender.
But he's not an A.
But I'm not going to have him as an A. I'm not feeling him to make him an A. He will not be my pick. You know, when I have to make a pick, he will not be my pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm sort of with you, although I don't know if I would call him a top contender in my
You said he has no shot on this show before.
Well, that was perhaps a little
rash.
Maybe being a little
hyperbolic.
Hyperbolic, that's the word I'm looking for. You know, it's just for the price that he's likely to be, I think he's going to have to be a super horse to win the Derby. You know, I've said it before, he's very similar coming into the race in terms of the running number of races, the top last buyer. He reminds me in some ways of Curlin, but not necessarily in his running style. Curlin was one who I think was so visually impressive for me that I thought was a top contender in 2007, but I still wasn't sure he could do it. I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he's as good as Curlin, and Curlin couldn't do it. And he's going to be third choice, probably.
I think he's third choice. On paper, he is, and that's the thing. Like I've had a number of people talking about, you know, on paper, he's the fastest horse, if you believe the buyer. He's the fastest horse.
That was such a weird racetrack. You know, it's such a hard...
Right.
It's such a hard... I do believe it.
I don't.
You don't believe it at all?
No.
Okay. I do believe that was a really hard... I believe that race was a lot more impressive than it looked visually because of the weirdness of the surface.
I think it was the way that they ran it. I can't possibly... I can't say that 110 is legit when a horse like Commissioner got a 109 the same day. I can't. But Commissioner's not a 109 horse.
It's true.
He's not.
It's true. No, that's fair.
I have to downgrade him.
Daggered home. Granted, the track was
That's the racetrack. And I think that he didn't look great coming back to the winner's circle either. But again, I think it's the racetrack. I think it was a 1.25 effort and 1.125 race. Maybe you can argue that's
of a
race
100%.
For both him and Upstart, and you chuck them both.
My only concern there is that maybe that was too hard. I think this is too much too soon.
Yeah, that's fair.
I agree. I think he was peaking there. I think if anything, he moves backwards here. And at the price he's likely to be, I will play against him.
That move up to me, that right there, if you are a believer in bounce, that off the bench 102 follows up with a 110, that's the one to me that is saying, we're taking a step back.
Watching him walk back to the winner's circle, too. I mean, he didn't look terrible, but I mean, he just looked... I mean,
and let's also...
horses were exhausted.
And I know we've talked about it on the podcast before. We'll talk about it again. John Velasquez has ridden him in all three. He chooses Carpe Diem, not this one. This one on paper is the fastest horse in the field.
Right.
Take that for what you will. Again, there's probably more politics than anything in that. But and a negative, his running style. He's forwardly placed. He's going to have to prove that he can sit off of horses and then pass them when the real running starts. So we'll see if he can do that.
He's got some pretty quality speeds coming up to discuss.
The 6 is Mubtahij. He won the UAE Derby last time out. That was about 5 weeks ago. goes out for Mike DeCock. He was in Arlington, or in Arlington. He was in Chicago at Arlington Park for a little while. He got a little bit of a blowout there. He's in Churchill Downs now. This is another one that I think a lot of people are one way or another. Which way are you leaning?
I'm in a camp on this one, but let Mike go first.
You know, it's funny. I think of him a lot of, along the same lines as Upstart. It's like, please let him get the one hole.
Another one you want to punt on?
Yeah, because you have to be a super horse to do this. And in a weaker derby, you could maybe make a case that he's a super horse. But even if he is a super horse, there's probably five or six horses that are as good as what we've seen in the last three or four years anyway. So the price he's likely to be, I'm likely to try and beat him.
I'm happy to oppose this horse. I mean, Mike DeCock is a wizard. To me, this would be his greatest trick. Yeah. Horse has to prove he can handle U.S. racing. We have some reasons to think he won't, based on his, even as easily as he won, his lead activity in the stretch. There was that story about DeCock wanted to bring in this proprietary feed that the horse eats, and they weren't going to let that in the country. I don't know. He's just, and then, oh, and here, bury the lead. I just don't think he's fast enough.
You don't think he's fast enough?
I do not. Not based on some translated speed figures.
What do you think, Matt?
Well, we heard that the tentative, you know, if Byer needed to put a number on him, he got a 95 for the UAE Derby. He's tough, just because...
You like him more than we do, it sounds like.
Yeah, I do.
So it's up to you to make the case.
You know what really bothered me was that the other day when we found out that he wasn't going to get Lasix. And I suppose it's the old, you know, kind of adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And in that respect, I respect that. Because you know what? We're not going to give the horse any kind of medication that he doesn't need. I just think against these horses and with them all being this good, I think he may need it to get over the hump. I still think he can hit the board. I think he's got a big shot at hitting the board.
I understand the logic, though. I mean, what DeCock said was, we don't know how he races with it, and we don't want to experiment here, and we don't know how he's going to react. That makes I can see that.
Right.
Makes some sense.
The lead change bit, I think that was more a product of he hadn't been trained to do it.
Yes.
And now I think, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if he hangs on his left lead. We've seen good horses in the past not do it, coming over from Europe or Asia or wherever, the Middle East. We've seen other horses do it. I mean, you go back to 2 years ago. If Declaration of War changes leads, he probably wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, for sure.
You go to the early 2000s, a horse like Giant's Causeway, I believe he changed leads. Saki changed leads. They were both grass horses. The other thing with this one, too, is his two races, I know he won by five in the seven furlong race, and I know he just missed out in the Guineas. These last two races were really good. They're really good, and they're not far off from the distance that he's going to have to go.
Right, mile and 3/16.
Right.
And when you're talking really good visually, really
impressive. Yeah, he was, again,
quickens up like a good horse.
The lead changes are obviously concerning because I don't think he can do that against good horses and still win, but I don't know that we've seen what this horse can be completely. And I know the one thing I will say, though, that gives me cause for pause, like Mike has said, it's not as though the Derby was this Derby.
Right.
Was the proper goal. They had always said if he wins the UAE Derby, they're going to go to Kentucky. It's not, though, like, I don't. But then again, the way DeCock was talking before the UAE Derby, they did an interview with him on their telecast over there. He was very bullish on this horse, saying, you know, we're going to win this race, and then we're going to Kentucky. Like, it's almost as if. And again, I don't know if that's how he normally is, but based on his track record of sending horses over here,
it's good.
They're meant when they come over here. So,
what is it? Do you have his record, Mike?
Well, in North America, it's I think 1-8, and that includes two races in at Woodbine. 1-8, although he had a second one that finished first but was disqualified.
Right, in the famous against me in the Arlington Million.
It was the Apache, right?
Right.
That sounds right.
The Apache. So in the U.S. he's 6-6 in the money.
That's what it was. I knew there was some positive.
They all hit the board. They were all running.
Right. And then two off the board in Canada.
And the success he's had just around the world. I mean, the guy's a great trainer.
Oh, yeah.
I'll say this. If the only handicapping data was the videos of the previous races, we had no form, I would like this horse. Because I think he looks good.
See, and I guess that goes back to, you know, the whole idea that is a number enough to scare you?
Yes, it is for
okay.
me.
Well, and let's flash back to the podcast right before Dubai World Cup. I had said, what if one of these horses runs? Because, Matt, you were like, oh, none of these have any shot. You know. What if one of them runs off the screen? And you said, still, no shot.
Because we had seen the past, and the difference was all these other horses that we had seen come over, they were doing it on the Tapita, and maybe I just didn't give it enough credence. And the way that the horse... you know, it's not even that the eight lengths. I don't care about the... It was the way that he did it.
Yeah.
He didn't do it like a European horse. He did it like an American horse. I know they're going to be going a heck of a lot faster, but we also talk about it. That was a standing start with the clock and all that
yes.
kind of stuff. So, you know, take the fractions with a bit of a grain of salt. And he sits in behind nicely. He takes dirt in the face. And
if you watch the other tape, which you can find on YouTube, there it's that wasn't like an anomaly.
No.
He's a nice moving horse.
He's a good mover. I just...
And it's not just the numbers; it's also just class concerns. You know, knowing what
fair.
He was running against.
Yeah,
so I don't want to make it sound like I'm just being a figure monkey.
Yeah. Remember, he beat my Johnny B. Good.
But and then now, see, now I feel like that is
great,
a much,
my Johnny.
But
B.
that's
Good.
A much fairer barometer. You want to go back to the whole Tis Now RJ thing?
Sure. Yeah.
This horse in Carpe Diem.
Mm-hmm. Moob Tahij and Carpe Diem both ran against my Johnny B. Good.
Right.
Carpe Diem beat him. How much?
My Johnny B. Good, he ran eighth in both races.
Was eighth in both races, beaten about how much in each?
About the same.
Eight or nine lengths?
No, much more than that.
Okay.
Much more than that. 20 almost.
Okay.
But the idea is...
I think it gets harder when
but
you're...
But then when you factor in the trip, and you factor in the feed, and you factor in all the other...
I'm just saying...
The two-year-old form versus...
You know, should
start.
There be that much of a difference? And we mentioned it, that in some of the future wagers, Moob Tahij finished lower than Carpe Diem. Now, I think the biggest thing, too, and when we're done in here, I'm going to go and start looking at... I want to know what's going on. Do you have your laptop here?
It is. Yeah, I got it.
I want to know what's going on overseas.
Oh, betting-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take a little look on
so you can pull that.
A website's name I won't say.
Let's get to the top five. Frosted is number five. Kieran McLaughlin, Godolphin, they're trying to get their first Derby. Well-documented breathing issue with this one. He comes back. He runs off the page in the Wood Memorial. You got to question what he beat that day. He got a 103 buyer. One, is he fast enough? Is this too much too soon? Pete, what do you think about this one?
I mean, I think he's come along. He's come along really nicely, and I feel bad for the degree to which I got off the bandwagon after the Fountain of Youth. But I do think he answered a ton of questions last time. You know, the breathing operation is a good candidate for what might have been responsible for that. And McLaughlin himself has really heated up as the year has gone along. I do think he needs another jump up, but I don't see why that's out of the question. I think he kind of represents a nice progression, factoring in the excuse in the Fountain of Youth. At the likely prices, he is a candidate to be the value of the race, I think.
Mike.
You know, I like him a little bit, and I think he'll be an okay price. My biggest concern for me is I don't think he beat a whole lot in the wood. And, you know, what I said a little earlier about Elk Beer, you know, I think applies to Frosted, at least in that race. I don't think the best horses were up in New York at the time. So I'm just a little concerned he's not fast enough to win. But I'd probably look to use him underneath at the right price. The stat that I was going to mention is since Funnyside's win, what was that, 2003?
Yeah.
Yes.
Horses exiting the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct are 0-23 in the Derby. None of them have hit the board.
Doesn't mean a thing to me.
Yeah, I know. It's
go,
more
you
of
go back to I'll Have Another. There hadn't been a Santa Anita Derby winner that won the Derby since like 88.
But some of them had hit the board.
I don't care. another one of those just fun trivia things.
It is a little bit of a trivia, but I think...
Well, you could tie it to the larger point Mike tried to make about the New York horses not
sure.
being as good
yeah.
as the other. I could spin you... I'm not saying I believe it, but I could spin you a yarn why that stat is more than trivia. But I just,
I think there was a time when the Wood Memorial was the key prep, if not, you know, one of the... I don't even know if it's one of the top three key preps. I think the bigger trainers, the bigger horses are going to Florida, to California, to Oaklawn, to even you know, even Louisiana. I'm not sure the wood really quite has the cachet that it did back in the 90s and early 2000s.
No, I would agree with that part of it. I mean, there's so many of these stats. It was like the whole thing with, you know, no horse has ever won the Derby from post 17. A couple of years ago, no horse had ever won the Derbies from post 19. Then I'll have another one. And it's like, oh, well, it doesn't matter now.
It doesn't matter to me.
So the minute one horse finally does do that, then that whole thing's gone. Right. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't do anything to dissuade me.
It's less right. And that's a fair point. I think, if anything, it means that a lot of those horses have been over bet and not really run to their odds. I mean, you had horses like Bellamy Road that were favored and didn't hit the board.
I think now there are many more horses that people are looking at. I think recent memory is really making people anti the wood. You know, with horses like Gemologist or Verrazano or Revolutionary or, you know, any of those sorts that they just... Revolutionary was in the races prior.
Okay.
His final prep was in Louisiana.
Yeah, he wasn't in the wood.
But he won the... He was the one that had the ridiculous trip in the... Was it the Gotham?
Gotham, I think.
Where he was checked and steadied and whatever it was. I just think a lot of people... The expectation level on some of these horses coming out of the wood, some of them were borderline favorites.
Oh, yeah.
And they ran...
Or big favorites.
Clunkers. And I think when you just look at them, I feel like Gemologist... I never thought he was that good. That was just me. Verrazano, I think, was a very good horse. I just didn't know how far he wanted to go. And I still think he was probably more of a grass horse. And guess what? He kind of validated it over in Europe. I mean, if you ran that horse here in the grass, I mean, he would have been a grade one winner. He goes over there and runs second in group one races. You know, I mean, that's a feather in his cap. Bellamy Road, you mentioned it. He ran that crazy race. But, I mean, I think it's safe to say if you believe in bounce, he probably bounced off that. He didn't get like a 116, something gaudy, something crazy looking.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
You know,
I mean, part of it, you just didn't really believe the number because it was so high compared to everything else.
Well, and that's another thing, too. I mean, maybe I was a little bit inflated. Maybe it wasn't really that number. And then you look at, you go back to Funny Side. Empire Maker beat him? No?
Yeah. Right.
So
in the
ran 1-2 that
Empire
year.
Maker was the favorite in that. And guess what? He ended up being a really good horse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, terrific.
You go back to Fupeg. Fupeg won the wood. Mm-hmm. We don't know what Escondrea could have done. We don't know what I Want Revenge could have done. So, I mean, I think that's my only thing. Look, they're fun to talk about. But, like, a lot of these stats,
Oh, yeah.
They don't hold any water with
them. I look at it. There are some stats, and, you know, I'm going to write a piece that's going to have some statistical information about there. There's some stats. I think the one post, I think, is a case that it affects your handicap.
I think it's valid.
There are some stats that are like, that's kind of interesting.
I want something. I need a stat that legitimately can affect the way the race is run.
Right. Where do you end up getting back to Frosted? What's your sort of bottom line on that?
I think he's good. I go back to what we talked about, where... If he runs and finishes the way that he looked like he was going to in the Fountain of Youth and then comes up here and runs the way they did, he's your third choice and really close to Dortmund, I think.
I think the reason why he came and ran up in New York after that Fountain of Youth was maybe it was the throat issue. Maybe he just didn't really take to the track that well. I think they wanted to move away from Florida to see, you know, to get the points and to see if they really had a Derby horse.
Right.
Because I think if he had continued on and he'd won, he probably would have showed up in the Florida Derby. I doubt he would have gone up to the wood.
I would agree with that. I think that's a very fair point. And I think a lot of people, too. That's another thing that we can go back to materiality and upstart. Gulfstream is a wonky track, man.
Yeah.
It's really hard for horses to come from there and replicate whatever form they have down there.
Either you do well or you don't.
You know,
horse for course.
The last one that did that and had the absolute ideal setup was Orb. I mean, that was just the stars aligning, you know? So that's the only thing about South Florida in the winter. That the horses down there, you got to take them all with a grain of salt, I think. So, yeah, I like Frosted. I think he's good. The Four American Pharaoh apparently is Secretariat reincarnate.
Waive the 5-year waiting period. Let's put him in the Hall of Fame right now.
Because according to a lot of people, why bother running the race on Saturday, right?
There's been a lot of social media hype. I have to say, though, it's one of these funny things where the you get the hype, right? And then you get the anti-hype. And with this horse, I'm excited that people are excited about him, and I believe that they're excited about him for a legitimate reason. So from a sporting point of view, I think it's great, and I don't want to be negative about the horse and some of the vibes that just continue to come in on this horse, and not just from people who are like reporters who don't watch horses for a living. People who watch horses for a living have been making those exact kind of it's slightly hyperbolic about Secretariat, but only slightly so. But I mean, people like Gary Young, people like John Nichols have had really, really nice things to say about this horse. It's affected my thinking and going to have me tick him down a little bit in the odds. I mean, I think this is your very clear favorite and most likely winner. Does he have to win? Is the race over? Should we bother running it? You know, the answers to these questions are no, no, and yes, respectively. Of course we should run the race. Of course it's not going to be easy. It's the Kentucky Derby. The favorite didn't win it for like 20, 25 years at one point. But I mean, I think that there's an awful lot to like here. He is potentially my lone A, or maybe an A press for me. I believe there's going to be value in multi-race bets being alive to this horse, and that is my goal, one of my goals, when I sit down to write my tickets for the Kentucky Derby.
Wow, you really changed lately, haven't you?
Well, you know, you actually start to handicap, and yeah, your opinions change.
Wow, that's great. You know, look, I've always thought this horse had a huge future and a lot of talent. I picked him in our draft. I think he's probably a legitimate favorite. I don't know if I would say he's my most likely winner, but he's certainly one of the top three or four for me. My biggest concern is price, yeah. And
that's why he might not be my pick. Yeah. In fact, he won't be my pick. It's too boring to pick him. Yeah. So in terms of like horse to put on top, public handicapper.
I don't think that's boring. I think that's a bad argument too, though.
There are times.
There's a difference between winning and being right and being boring.
Right.
If you think he's the most likely winner.
Oh, he's definitely. I mean, definitely the most likely winner.
See, I don't know. I can't say that.
I look at a year like 2008 with Big Brown. You know, if he's going to be about the same price as Big Brown, who was 2.4 to 1.
I am thinking that's going to be the whole time I've said 7 to 2. Nobody's going to be more than 7 to 2 with all these good ones. The hype, I think now we're looking at 2.4.
I mean, it's easy to red broil a horse like Big Brown, but Big Brown at the time, he was one I thought was a layover. I thought he was by far the best horse in the field. And if there was any knock on him at all, it was, you know, what could he win from the 20 post? But you know, that's why you got a little bit better price than you normally would get on by far the best horse in the field. But here you've got a case where 6 or 7 of them, I think, Matt, you said 7 of them have run 100,
like eight
have run a 100 plus buyer, and he doesn't even have the top buyer in the field. So at a short price, I can certainly make a case for him not winning. But he's
not a stone cold single.
If you had the first pick in our draft, would you have taken him?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
If we redrafted today, are you asking me to say what I would have said then or what I would say now?
What would you have said before all this hullabaloo?
Well, it's not just the hullabaloo. It's actually also like, you know.
Say the Arkansas Derby
happened since then.
Say the Arkansas Derby. Oh. You have first pick.
Then it'd be like a heater.
Got to pick one.
Well, I'll say what I would pick now, and without question, it's America Ferrera. Because that I know.
I feel like too many people are getting. Look, maybe he is really just the second coming. I don't think your opinion should change that greatly.
I thought the Arkansas Derby for me. I thought before then there was a lot of reasons. There was a lot more reasons to question the hype before that race than after it.
I will also say, and this is me. You know, we brought up Mike. You brought up like the competition that Frost had faced.
Mm-hmm.
American Pharoah has not faced a real horse in 2 starts. You know that, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, he hasn't.
So for the same, anyone that throws out any of that kind of stuff, I'm not saying it's you guys, but like anyone that says, well, you know, what's he beaten? American Pharoah is the head of that class.
Yeah, no, for sure. When you were talking about how bad the Sunland Derby was, I'm thinking in my mind, how much better was the Arkansas Derby?
Very good point. I don't know. I mean, he looks.
But I mean, I'm going to use both of them. So.
He looks like the real deal.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But what's he going to do? Illman brought this up. We were talking about it. Let's say at top of the lane, he is there. He's on the lead. And he's got Dortmund just to his inside. And Dortmund wants to fight. What is this thing going to do? Is American Pharoah going to put up a fight, or is he going to say, no, you're supposed to just keep going behind me? If this one starts coming back, is he going to sulk? And I don't know.
I guess
don't
we'll know find out at a short price. That's yeah, the
that's,
problem.
That's the thing, though.
I also, this one I was talking about Post before, Post is huge for me with this horse.
Yeah.
Well, I think it should be with any favorite. No?
Right.
Yeah, but remember you were saying before you didn't care if a horse was 2 or 20?
Yeah, I don't care.
But I'm saying I would care very much if American Pharoah was 2 or 20. Because I think down on the inside, you still run that risk from a pace point of view of getting like lit up. And I think if he can break it more, much more outside and have tactical options and not have to go from the gun the way you're going to, say, Post 6 or 7, pick a number, inside. See, down inside to me, I would change. I would definitely tick up my value line on this horse, drawn outside where I think he's going to get a more clear trip and really be able to use that tactical speed and settle for sure. Or not for sure. There's no for sure's in the Derby. But have a better odds of getting that kind of trip, the more I like him. You look dubious.
I just feel like if he looks like that much of a standout now, and I don't want to say standout, cause it's, but like, shouldn't he be able to overcome that?
He might be able to, but that's where I'm saying at the price, I would get a little tepid. He definitely wouldn't be my on top pick, 5 poster in. Because, I mean, the same reason we talked about that yes, that phenomenon is most pronounced when you're dealing with a horse who breaks from the rail, but the concept is the same for horses in the top 5, potentially, if they're like horses that aren't true front runners but have some tactical speed. You still got this wall. You still got the cavalry coming over on you.
Didn't Chrome break from 5?
5.
He did. I'm not saying you can't win. I'm just saying it's not as – I didn't bet Chrome, and I wouldn't have if I bet the race 100 times.
Well, but you also didn't love him, though.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I like this horse considerably more.
Question, I guess I'm just trying to find and poke holes in any, and I don't mean to make it sound like I'm just holding your feet to the fire. Like,
no, that's fine. Challenge me. I'm good.
Because this horse is just so, at this point, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that doesn't sound good. I don't know.
No, you're being honest.
In a year where I feel like there are probably 6 or 7 horses that might be favored in any other Derby, it's hard for me to really want to take the price I'm likely to get on American Pharoah. And that's what it boils down to for me.
All right. Let's go through the other three, and we'll circle back. You know, when we do the third is Carpe Diem. This one was one of Pete's favorites. He's still one of my favorites. Mike, I know you like him a little bit. Pletcher's, I suppose you could call him his A horse. Won the Bluegrass, won the Tampa Bay Derby. He's only finished, he's finished on the exact all 5 times. The only time he hasn't won was the Juvenile when he ran second. This is another one that a lot of people either love him or hate him. And you are.
I'm in the middle. Okay. I'm off him, but I give him like an 8% chance to win the race. He's not a non-contender. He'll be on some tickets. I'm not tossing him with impunity, but there's a lot that I don't like. I'm not going to rehash the argument we had last week. You can go back and listen to that if you want. I still don't love how long it took Johnny to commit to the horse. I don't think that's a great thing. I think he's another who's going to have to keep improving. I don't get a lot of vibes that tell me this horse is about to run the race of his life. I'm a little dubious at the potential price, but if something surprises me, if everyone in the world gets off this horse, I'm happy to have him, and I'm happy to be live to be the big favorite for the bobblehead if he wins. But he's not a horse I'm looking to put a lot of my action around.
I like him. I don't know if I'd say he's my most likely winner, but he's certainly one of my top 3 or 4.
Also, really raced not against much. I mean, if we're going to make that point about the other horses.
He finished second in a pretty, I think,
relatively strong.
I mean, probably the best juvenile.
He was great in the juvenile. I meant as a 3-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's the bigger aspect of things where we say this is a really good group. None of them have faced one another.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean.
We're going on figures.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes different when they show up on the track.
And that's partly why I like him is I don't think we've seen his best yet. And, knowing what he was as a 2-year-old and knowing that he's done nothing wrong as a 3-year-old and maybe even from a figure standpoint regressed in that second start as a layoff, I could see him taking a big step forward here. I don't know if that's good enough to win because, of course, from a figure standpoint, he's still, you know, 10 to 15 points lower than some of the top ones in the field. But at the price that I'm likely to get, I might be willing to make a case for that.
I will admit the Pletcher stuff starts to scare me a little bit.
Right, because it's not just the Derby. It's the stats at 10 furlongs, too.
And it's at short prices. Right. Not that this is going to be that short. He's probably going to be 12.
Right.
But
I think, you know, Pletcher won the Derby in the third start off a layoff. I think he, you know, we talked about it on the show before. I think he saw this as his Derby horse back, you know, late last year. And he started mapping out a campaign where he would emulate that with Carpe Diem hitting Churchill on the first Saturday in May and the third start off a layoff. I don't know if Lightning is going to strike twice, but that's my sense from Pletcher's standpoint is he's trying to replicate it.
I think he's good. I think he can run kind of anywhere you want him if he can come from 3-4 out of it or he can be on the lead. I think he's a good sort. I think he has every right to improve. I don't know what else. There really isn't much more to add. I think he's a logical contender. I think he fits in here really well. The two is Dortmund. He is far and away the biggest horse in the race. He has the highest, no, not the highest, but he has, as a three-year-old, he has only run 104, 104, 106 buyers. He looks like the real deal. He's a big boy. His dad, Big Brown, won the race. Thoughts?
You want to start with him?
For me, he's my most likely winner. My concern is price and trip, as with pretty much any horse in the Derby.
Yeah, I mean, he always seems to run his race. I think he's improving. I think he looks likely to get 10 furlongs. I love that he's won at Churchill. The questions for me, I don't love a giant horse stuck down also in the first five post positions. That could get very ugly. And, you know, Matt, you've brought it up. I've excused it because of the losing the shoe, but the late lead change last time. There are definitely some questions here. But I mean, if he's not an A, he's a B plus. He's everywhere on my tickets, second only to Pharaoh.
I'm leaning towards saying that he is the most likely winner just because he hasn't done anything wrong. I'm terrified that he's become a need to lead type. He hasn't come from out of it in any of his 3-year-old starts. He's been on the engine in all of them. And I don't care really that it has to do with the fields or anything like that, or he hasn't had to.
I'm surprised you say that just as a tape watcher, because don't you see the difference in him in the last two races?
Man,
than the one off the bench.
Yeah, but guess what? I mean, if he can relax that much, you can have him relax. You don't need to go. Well, who says you have to go 46-3 to the half?
Yeah, I mean, fair. I just think he's just been that much faster than what he's been running against.
No, my point is though, like you can hold him back. You said he's relaxed. He's at the command of the jock. I mean, if you really want him to sit, you can let somebody else go 47 to the half if you want, no?
I don't know why you do that, though, when you're running your race and you're relaxed and you're just faster than them. I don't see why you have to, you know, do the full-on stranglehold just to have a horse run in front of you because, I mean, you're saying you'd feel better about his Derby chances if they'd force the horse back in one of those.
No. I'm afraid that he has become this, though. I mean, until he prove me as his 3-year-old, you can do it differently. That's all. That's the only thing. And I think at this point, he's very logical. He has all the numbers. He's got all the figures. The late lead change bothers me. Bothers me some. His latest workout was interesting because he went slow really early, very slow, and absolutely steamrolled home. Got his final quarter in 22 flat. Opened up, his first four was like 50, 51 seconds. I mean, he walked early on. And
doesn't seem like a horse that's going to be.
I wonder if that, that was probably the idea that, you know, we got to get him to relax a little bit more early on. Again, though, you know, you talk about a shortish price, 4-1, 9-2, maybe 5. I mean, I don't know.
I got all the prices here from the UK.
Beautiful.
We can do that quick to wrap the show. I guess we've been going on here for a while.
We have been going on for a while. The one international star, he has the most points. He hasn't done anything wrong as a 3-year-old. He gets no respect whatsoever. His figures are light, but he has the right running style. Do you think he can move forward again?
I wouldn't think so based on just the videos.
Do you think he can hit the board?
I probably wouldn't be pigheaded about it. I'd probably use him for third and fourth in the widest spreads there.
Mike?
Agree on both points.
I think he can hit the board. Look, I've been doubting him forever, and he can just continue to prove me wrong. He's another one. Fusichi Pegasus is his sire. He ended up winning the Derby. He has the right running style. It's hard for me to continue to knock this one. I'm going to limit him to underneath, but would it be an absolute mind-boggler if he beat me at this point? I don't think so, no.
No, you could see him getting one of those crazy Derby trips, weaving in and out of horses like he likes to do. Yeah. But there's just not enough. I mean, I can't blame. We're giving him short shrift because we're running out of time, too. You could say plenty of positive things about this horse, but I just my gut is not in the exact.
Yeah, we've gone on obscenely long.
I don't think he's the top of his generation.
Yeah. We've gone on obscenely long. Let's run. Give me the top five choices right now.
All right, let's talk. You know, obviously, this is showing at different bookmakers all over, so there's no real consensus. American Pharoah is as low as 2-1 and as high as 3-1. Dortmund as low as 4-1, as high as 5-1. This one shocked me. Carpe Diem, basically 7s and 8s across the board in the UK. Somebody over there likes him.
Mm-hmm.
Moob Tahij ranges from 9-1 to 12-1. Materiality trading at 10 and 12 and 14. At the various shops. Fire, may as well do Firing Line and Frosted and International Star and Upstart, and then we'll call it. Materiality, did I just do him? 10s to 14s, yep. A Firing Line, 14 and 16. Frosted, 16, pretty much across the board. International Star, 20 or 25. Upstart, 20 or 25.
I'm surprised Upstart's that high. I figured he would be a little bit lower than that. I figured he'd probably be 15, but that, hey, if you like him, that's good news. Yeah, this went much longer because we were going to do some other things. We don't have time for that, though. Do we want to give a lean right now? I know we're talking price and we're talking all that. Just picking put the final combination of what you think the prices are likely to be and who you think has a chance.
I'm gonna write my own rules here a little bit.
Go ahead.
If it's a contest, as a contest race, take one horse who you play if it comes down to one race and you need it, one if you need more of a mid price, and one if you need a bomb.
I like it.
So my I need the winner
let's
of the
do,
race.
Let's do it that way for the three of us.
I like it. If I need the winner, I'm going to go American Pharoah. If I need a mid price, and I'm assuming the mid price I'll need will be longer than even able to think about playing Dortmund, I'm going to go Frosted. Somewhere in the middle there. And then if I am out of it in the contest and I need to pass 20 people, it's Bolo.
Mike?
Very, very similar thinking there, Pete. Although I would say if I need the winner, I'm going Dortmund. Frosted, maybe Firing Line, depending on the price, would probably be my mid-price horse. And then for my bomber, someone like Bolo. I'm trying to think who else might be in that range. Probably Bolo is my most likely huge make it rain kind of horse.
Most likely winner. If I need to pick the winner, I'm going to go with Dortmund. Middle price, Frosted. And if I need a bomb, a get out of Dodge craziness, give me 10 Sender.
I like it.
At what figures to be 40-1. So, all right, guys, take a deep breath.
That was a lot.
That was a lot.
Hopefully folks enjoyed
it. Hopefully you stick through it. Again, post positions tomorrow night. We'll be on live.drf.com all throughout the week, 12:30 on Wednesday and Thursday. And then all day Friday, all day Saturday, we'll have all sorts of people here in the studio. I'll be down in Louisville with a bunch of our other handicappers giving you some updates and whatnot. So best of luck. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday going over everything. Again, you want to check out publichandicapper.com. Until then, Pete.
May you win all your Derby Superfecta photos.